the worst thing that we can do is isolate. You know, I went down another like dark rabbit hole and I started isolating very quickly. And you don't even realize you're doing it. You're just like, I just don't want to go out. I made plans. I don't want to see anybody. I'm going to cancel those plans last minute. I'll tell you what, I'm just going to eat. It's going to be hard to get out of bed. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to do my thing. And then I'm going to go back to bed and I'm going to watch movies and stare at TikTok and never communicate with my friends or relatives or people that love me and that I love. Avoid isolation, because that only creates the rumination of thoughts that are bad. They're toxic for your brain. It's like sipping poison and expecting somebody else to die for it.
The episode you're listening to on the Men of the Hour is brought to you by Alice Mushrooms. All right, here's the thing about mushrooms I've learned over the past couple of days, if not the past couple of years, is that the right ones like lion's mane, reishi, cordyceps, I mean, there's so many ones out there that they're starting to infuse into things like gummies and powders and potions and things of that sort. But this particular company is starting to take mushrooms into the chocolate world, and it is so fun to watch these amazing founders do just that. I do know one thing for sure about the mushroom space is that if you start taking them in the right ways at the right time, they can be really beneficial for you. Alice Mushrooms was born out of a desire to give people what neither a pharmaceutical industry nor supplements have provided, and that's safe, effective consumables that pair long-term benefits with immediate boosts of cognitive functioning. Their decadent chocolate treats combine the best organic fruiting body mushrooms with the best nootropics and adaptogens. This union pairs long-term benefits of mushrooms with the immediate effects of the nootropics and keeps you on your journey into the delights of fungi. And the result, of course, an indulgent daily routine that's good for you and only gets better with time. I want you all to try these chocolates so bad and let me know what you think about it. Whether you snag a bundle of their energy and focus chocolates or their sleep chocolates. I don't swear by a lot of things these days, but I definitely swear by Alice Mushrooms. So try them for yourself today by heading to alicemushrooms.com and using my code Justin20 for 20% off at checkout. That's alicemushrooms.com and use the code Justin20 for 20% off at checkout. Hey, everybody, you're back, and it's the Men of the Hour podcast. You could have chose any other show. I mean, there's millions out there now, probably more than millions, because everybody has a podcast, so I'm sure you're probably even overwhelmed deciding to get on this one, but it's probably because you saw his name, and that name is Pearson Foday. I'd actually asked him, I was like, how do you pronounce this last name of yours? It kind of looks like Fode, and he's like, no, Justin, it's actually Foday. So we have him on the show right now, and I'm very excited, because, of course, like you can call him an actor, you can call him a creator, a producer, but I'm excited to get to know you, my friend, and then show people another side of you that you may not have shown other folks on a podcast or in another interview. That's usually kind of how I like to navigate these things. And then I think I'm 121 for 121. So I'm excited to interview you and get to know you. But one of the biggest things I've noticed is that you don't stop. And I had asked Pearson before we got into recording today, I said, you know what? What have you been up to? Just catch me up on your life. And you're still working. You know, amidst all these things that have happened with your family and you got back home and you will probably always be working. So we'll be talking a lot about your career in and out of Hollywood. Obviously you're home now, back on the farm, still working somehow, but it's kind of nice to see that people like you don't just live on a hill in LA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In addition to that, there's a lot of topics that I'm sure we'll dive into that make a lot of sense for helping us understand where you've navigated your mental health and your well-being, especially being in the glitz and glam and everybody's thinking you're some hunk of burn and love every time someone talks to you, which is great. Listen, we love that version of Pearson, but I know that there's other parts of you too that we can't wait to get to know. So thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here. I've heard great things. I've watched many of your interviews in preparation for this moment, and I'm super excited. And by the way, if anybody chose any of the other millions of podcasts, they've made a grand mistake. Totally foolish. They should be coming back to this every single time. By the way, this is 121 episodes?
122.
This, think about all the content, the seasons that they can go through and enjoy. This is perfect. They should go nowhere else.
Well, don't stop working, Pearson, because that sounds great. It sounds like you're very interested in taking 122 episodes. Maybe we'll start working to make them all a different way. Because in podcasting, right, this is like what we're doing right now on Zoom together. Funny, he jumps on the Zoom call. I'm like, hey, I just scarfed down some Chipotle. We're in my room. We're probably in his room. And nothing's changed in 4 years. And something that is so cool about that is we can, right? We can do this in person, but like imagine the scheduling headache. And to give you guys an inside look, like I've studied Pearson for the past 2 days and ever since he said yes to doing this, but in doing that, could you have imagined if I'm like, hey, will you come into the studio in Nashville? Or can I fly out to your home where you're at in the farm? Like there's so much that you don't have to do so we can actually focus on a good thoughtful conversation. But no, thanks for saying that, dude. It's funny. I almost stopped doing this whole podcasting thing to go back to maybe some red carpet stuff. Then interviewing, and I go, but if my friends are connected to people like Pearson, I do want to keep doing this podcasting thing. Cause you guys, you know what I mean? Like that's the power of conversation. So anyway, nonetheless, you've been very busy. We've seen you hit the big screens with movies like Superman and just everything in between that makes sense for TV and film and docu. And I'm sure that there one day you'll be launching your own, which, you know, we can probably talk about here in a moment. I do want to begin this conversation though, with why you went back home. And you told me it was really from the strike, but you know, that paused everyone's career. What were your first thoughts on not being able to work for the very first time, I believe, since you'd started your acting career, or at least not being able to have the opportunity to work? I do want to start with that because it's a pretty big deal right now that you guys are back at work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, thankfully right now we're reviewing the contract to see if it's appropriate for the 100-day, the longest strike in acting history. You know, the beginning of the strike was exciting and everybody was interested because we've all been just getting ripped off by the streamers nonstop. You know, where we used to make most of our money in residuals, you take a smaller, you know, cut up front, especially for like the working actor. I think I may not be as affected as much as, say, like a day player on a show. You know, it's their first time getting on something and they work, you know, one or three episodes a year. And that can be really hard because you're trying to pay rent. You've got two other jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing so many other things in the midst of that. And that used to be me. You know, you make just enough money. You're making under poverty wages in America. And you're trying to pay rent with 12 roommates. And you've got, you know, bills up the ass. And you can't get it together. So this strike had to happen because the streamers were ripping everybody off. And when the new model came out, the SAG AFTRA group we didn't set up new contracts for streaming services because nobody thought it was going to be taken seriously. You know, 15, 20 years ago, if you said we're going to watch movies on the internet, people would have laughed at you. And they did. And when it happened, I would say for the first like week to 2 weeks, everybody's very excited and gung ho. And I was excited for the changes. But I would say you saw a tonal shift in everybody's mental state about a month in. And they were like, oh man, like I can't afford rent again. It's worse than it was when I just was doing a couple guest star episodes. I'm struggling to buy food. I can't figure out what I'm going to do. On top of the fact that, you know, most entertainers' identity is really wrapped up in our work. You know, this is where
not all of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, a lot of people will be like, oh, you can't let that be your identity. It's like, how the fuck do you not let that be your identity? This is everything we've dreamed of. This is everything we put our hearts and soul into. And I get it. I get what they're saying. But at the same time, when you eat, sleep and breathe film and TV and entertainment, of course, a piece of your identity is going to be wrapped up in this. And when it's taken away from you, you then have to fill that with something else. And, you know, we've been close to a year of not working per the writer's strike, starting it all off. And yeah, you know, specifically for me, you know, I made a decision fairly early on. I saw the strike coming and I knew we were going to drop into the acting strike, you know, within a few months. I was like, yeah, you know what? This seems like a good opportunity to kind of like travel for a little bit and see what's going on. And I kept my place back in LA, but I've spent the vast majority of the year just not being there because everybody was so depressed the entire time. And I had a lot of dreams and goals that I was setting out to pursue, and I couldn't be around people that were just talking negatively the entire time. And then of course I at some point travel up to the farm, and I've been writing up here and taking meetings since I've been here. And after the first time I left, my dad had had a heart attack, And not to freak anybody out, this is like his fourth heart attack that he's had. So we're you know, he's like an ox, you know, he'll just get back up and keep going. But it's stressful. It's a bad time in the world. And so I'm like, okay, well, let me come back. I'll help you guys out. This is kind of a perfect timing thing. And so I fly back up and I'm, you know, helping him with dropping off hay across the state. You know, he's a farmer. I've come from a long lineage of farmers. And we're dropping off hay, unloading it. You know, it's no small deals, you know, 30 tons of hay per load. And we're single-handedly unloading 100-pound bale every single time. And that takes a lot of work. And then I leave again to go test for another character for this other project in the midst of the strike. And it was the right move. I ended up getting the character, but then my dad had another heart attack while I was gone. And I was like, dude, I call him. I was like, man, you got to stop this. This is a bad, it's bad. Whatever you're doing, stop it. Just stop. And I come back up and, you know, I'm helping him out. And then I'm also flying back and filming this project in the midst of it. And then flying back up and doing all these things. And, you know, I think we forget a lot of times, like, despite how bad everything is, despite all this other stuff going on around us, we kind of forget to take care of ourselves. You know, there's so much stress and there's so much pressure on our own lives, and we kind of divert inwards that it leads up to the stress of a heart attack or the stress of crippling depression and anxiety that you can't even get out of bed in the morning. Those sorts of things haven't been talked about enough during the strike and how it's affected so many people in so many different ways.
I mean, yeah. And you hit on so many. I'm over here taking notes, as I always have to, or else I'll forget. You got give us an understanding of this farm life for a moment. I know you've brought it up in interviews before. And before I even have questions about crippling anxiety and your father's, you know, I have so many more questions, but this farm life and picking up, you said 30 pounds of hay, like, right? They're stacks. Mm-hmm. And
30.
Right. Like, is that something that was always so normal to you and to be able to go back to it? Like, what has been kind of in your head about revisiting and really like reliving this, right? In like such a crazy time where, to your point, a lot of people are really depressed when they can't work. And so what's interesting, I feel like, for you is that you got to go home. And even if you did have to go test for characters and stuff, like being in a place that feels like grounding almost, right? But like, what's been going on in your head having come from Hollywood, then going back to what, obviously explain what the farm is, right? Like, but like, how has that been balanced in your head to be able to go home and these things happen to your dad, but then you know you have to go back to Hollywood and you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So the experience of growing up on the farm, it's so normal to me. And I was a weird little kid. You know, like I was a nerd. I was a dork. Like I just, the facade that you see on Instagram is just, it's a facade. And I was homeschooled. We were fairly religious growing up. You know, we were raised pretty Christian and I grew up on a farm. So I was really isolated. Like I didn't have a whole lot of contact with the outside world. And I saw movies and I was like, oh my God, there's these other universes that people take part in. And you know, there's Jedi, you know, Star Wars, like Luke went off to save the galaxy. That could be me. And I think I really resonated with Star Wars because of the fact that he grew up on a farm and because it was such an other world for me. But I'll get into that later. It's hard work. I don't know if people can complain about a lot of jobs, but if you haven't worked the land, if you haven't like spent time on a farm or a ranch, it's a different kind of labor. You know, we were raised getting up before the sun rises and we'd go out and hoe weeds in an onion field till the sun set. We literally picked rocks out of acres of fields and we'd have a, you know, giant front loading truck follow us. And we'd dump, you know, 80 to 20 pound to 120 pound rocks into this truck. So that way the field could be tilled and planted with seeds afterwards. I raised cows. That was how I paid my rent. When I first moved to LA, I got my first calf. His name was Chocolate. I bottle fed him and I raised him and I sold him to then buy more cows and that sort of thing. And it's intensive labor that your body hurts and your brain's dead at the end of every single day. But it's so normal to me that it's just life. And I highly recommend if anybody ever gets a chance to like go spend time on a farm and see what it's really like. It's really cool because, you know, we feed the world. We feed people and we take care of the most basic needs of humans, which is food. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an admirable work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an admirable job. It's an honorable job that farmers and, you know, people that raise livestock do. Mm-hmm. And it's challenging, but in the midst of the strikes, it also provided an opportunity for me to escape and come back to something that was a bit more grounded and a bit more normal for my brain, and hang out in the dirt and the cows and just get a chance to reground myself and not get softened by the fun lifestyle of LA, get a little bit hardened by the grunt work that you've got to go out and you've got 30 tons of hay that you've got to unload by hand and restack the next day. And it's good stuff. It'll put your body through the ringer. It's the best CrossFit workout you've ever gotten. How about that?
How did I think you were going to say that? You,
you know, it's my dad and I's version of getting a workout together.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, listen, you say your body and your brain's dead, right? At the end of the day. And it sounds like it's kind of a win for all. You know, there's a really important piece that you just mentioned, which is groundedness. And it's funny, I wrote down grounded. Like I like will look at you and I have this right here. Like I'm like taking notes on the right. My handwriting looks like complete shit. But I was ready to ask you about about groundedness, because there is something to like touching the soil. And I was told the other day by my therapist that like, okay, go barefoot on the grass and you'll be very, very surprised at the energy you feel. And I can go down a whole rabbit hole about that and I won't. But for you, Pearson, like, did you miss that? Did you feel like moving to LA and getting consumed almost in this like Hollywood life? You just said it, like it made you a little soft in some regard, I'm sure. But then it's also, you look at all your depressed friends out in LA who aren't working, that are not going, maybe they chose not to go back, you know, home. Mm. And maybe they fled for a reason, then that's on them. But for you, it sounds like you had no problem going back and getting grounded and realizing that like, that's where you come from, right? Mm. But in that, or I guess in doing that and going back home, like, did you miss it? And then, you know, like, how does that really sit with you when you know you have to go back to LA and go back to work like super full time with all these projects coming up?
Yeah. You know, it's very grounding. And to your therapist's point, there's definitely something to be said about literally just engaging with nature. Mm-hmm. They've done a lot of studies literally just about looking at trees or staring at the ocean and being there physically. There's something that our little lizard brain that just shuts down. And it's like, oh, we don't have to fight or flight right now. We can actually embrace the world around us. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's like I spent the first half of my life on a farm. And it's so, most people would think it's very peaceful, but it's not always peaceful for somebody that grew up doing it. But it's so natural to me. And even when I move to, you know, a new apartment or a new house in LA, every time I look for a spot, I always look for something that has trees or it has some openness where I can physically touch the ground or I can step outside and I don't feel like I'm in, you know, the center of Hollywood where there's some homeless dude just pissing on the concrete and throwing his shit at me. I think that's always stressful for me. I'm just like, I want to go visit that, but I don't want to live in it. And the farm, it definitely gives you that, you know, you go out in the middle of the night, I'll finish a writing session and I'll walk outside and I can look up and I can see every constellation. You know, I get to see the Milky Way galaxy ring just like cutting across the sky. And that I think in a lot of ways is more healing for your mentality and your health than going and grabbing a drink with friends. Not that that's not necessary, but there's a lot of times where we just got to disconnect from LA or the entertainment industry or social media, whatever your vice is, and just reconnect with the ground, with the earth for a few minutes and be like, oh yeah, this is all a lot. I've put so much importance and gravitas on things, but life is so much bigger and broader than just my phone and scrolling through TikTok. It's exciting, and there's a whole universe out there for us to explore, and we just don't take the time to really engage with it.
That's right. I mean, you said it. I think a lot of us don't know until we hear it from someone like you that's had that experience growing up, but then are able to go back to it and say, hey, listen, outside of the social media stuff and outside of what we're living in, and you're right. I think the media and entertainment business, I mean, I learned this last night, even we were at an event, and sometimes in this, I guess any industry really, right? You can consider this for sports and venture capital and whatever. Lawyers are probably dealing with this too. And it's like, we are all living in such a quick world right now of easy access and transaction, and things are just always constantly moving, and you always feel like there's a rush or a hurry, and it gets to the anxiety you just mentioned earlier, and that then gets, we get lost in like the sauce of whatever that might be. And maybe it is your profession, maybe it's your lifestyle. Like some people go to LA and they don't want to work, they just live out there, and that's good for them. But all encompassing to what you said, there's an element of being grounded that allows you to like really think about what you want out of your life. So then for you, having that almost foundation of grounding, it sounds right. What was in your mind when you decided to go and just chase entertainment and now become this guy? I'm looking at your PDF now and I'm like, all right, listen, dude, very attractive man and very accomplished. People love you, and I'm sure they eat you up every time that you go out. So like, that is a lot to deal with, which we'll get into in a moment.
Stop saying those things. Stop it.
But imagine, like, you're living a lot of, I would argue that you are living some people's dreams, because you're a character to some folks. You're a hot model to others. You are an inspiring personality to some. You're a creator that people want to be like. You're an entrepreneur that folks want to aspire to, you know, accomplish a lot of the things you've done. That's heavy. That's heavier than the cow stacks you were carrying as a kid.
Yeah.
Much heavier. Like, that's the load of all of that. How do you manage it? Like, how do you handle it? Are you in therapy for any of this? Like, how does that work in Pearson's world? I'm curious. We're all curious.
Oh yeah, no, I'm a big advocate of therapy, and I absolutely do therapy. And it's funny because, you know, we being raised on a farm, that was one of those things. I don't need to talk to a shrink. Get out of here. And I got to LA and I realized how beneficial that could be for your mental health. Let me give the preface. As a little kid being raised on a farm, and I mentioned this earlier, you see a movie like Star Wars and being completely isolated from the world, like Luke Skywalker, you suddenly see this guy go off to save the galaxy. He becomes a Jedi and he saves his father and he saves the people around him, and he inspires masses of people to change the galaxy or the world or the universe, whatever it may be. I saw myself in those shoes, and I loved movies, and I thought, well, my Jedi powers aren't very strong. I can't move anything with my mind, which is super disappointing. But if I can get people to sit in a room for 90 minutes, and when you're in there and the lights dim, your race, your religion, your creed, your nationality, your beliefs, they don't exist. For those 90 minutes, all that exists is that story that's on screen. And suddenly people that would have had a disagreement earlier about your political view are now laughing at the same beat. And they're crying on the same moment. And they feel for the same character and the villain and the protagonist. And there's all these beautiful, exciting things. And by the time they've walked out, you've just bonded strangers. And they can all relate and talk about how incredible or how terrible this movie may have been. And it changes their lives and gives them a moment of reprieve from how terrible their life may have been outside of that movie, or how good it is. Storytelling is such a great medium and a very honorable job. If you do it right and you care about the audience, and we care about entertaining people at its core. Like, if I'm going to spend $20 on a movie ticket, and I've got 12 kids and I got to feed them and I'm making minimum wage, I want to know that this is $20 well spent. And we got to get back to that as Hollywood, is like, as entertainers, to really give people something worth going to the movies for and having that moment of reprieve. And then how that translated into my own life, as a kid moving from the farm to the city is it starts off with glitz and glam, and it's so exciting and it's so new and it's so fun. And I'm sure you experience this as well, which is everything is new and beautiful. And you want to touch and grab and feel all the exciting diamonds and rings and all the cool lights. And, you know, there's beautiful people around you and money and all this stuff is just hitting you very quickly.
Yeah.
But you're also alone. And you're isolated. And I like to say that people call LA the city of angels, but really it's the city of orphans and lost dreams. And if you don't find like your surrogate family out there fairly quickly, it'll eat you up. And that's when you see people falling into these massive depressive pits. And I've been there, where your community either moves away or you didn't build it the right way and you become an LA orphan. And you can't really find your way in the midst of all that. And it becomes very difficult and it's very grueling and it's sad and it's lonely and it sucks, you know? And that's more or less when I started therapy for the first time was I was in a very dark place. I had some of my own, I would call them traumatic events happen from the time that I had moved out into my time being in LA. And I was, I don't take that word lightly. I don't think that that's something we should throw around because somebody was mean to us one day. I think there's levels of trauma for sure. I realized that it was me or I would eventually just drive into the other side of traffic a little bit too long. You know what I mean? And so I had to take that very seriously and get my head on straight before I continued down this road, because fame and celebrity and power only help manifest and embolden all of those good or bad aspects of your personality.
I agree.
Yeah. So if you don't get those under control, it's only going to make you a worse or a better person by the time you hit that stage. Mm. That was my revelation, but also a bigger revelation of like, I've got to get my life together because I might do something stupid that would more or less be painful for everybody that had to survive it.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, anybody who's listening probably felt the same thing. It's called a breaking point, you know, mm-hmm. And a lot of us, whether or not you're in entertainment or even in LA for that matter, a lot of folks listening right now are coming to us from Bangkok or, you know, anybody who's in Australia right now, like, hey, you know, like maybe they haven't necessarily experienced LA, but they've experienced what you're talking about, which is a certain level of trauma that gets their mind to a very weird place. Some people call it dark, and sure, we can go down that morbid hole later, but like that weird toxic place in your mind where you're like, holy moly, like that doesn't feel good. I don't feel good. And sometimes I just don't feel human. So then for you, as you've you've pretty much navigated it, sounds like. Like when I saw you on the Zoom call, I was like, oh, he's healthy. He's like shaking his hand as if it's like a so-so, I guess is what they call it nowadays. But you've managed, right? Maybe navigated, you're still navigating, but you've managed it well enough where I watch you, and I could be very wrong. You tell me if I'm wrong. I watch you in your interviews. I watch you with your new community on social, and I'm watching you on the Zoom call. You do have a level of being grounded. I want to go back to that for a moment. Like you have a level of who, you know who you are. You know, if I looked as good as you too, I'd be like, okay, listen, I know who I am. And thank you for being so sexy. No, I'm okay. But like that is, it's a gift to be so grounded. So let's go back to that for a second. Like, as things might get tough or you revisit certain mental traumas, for example, where you're just like, gosh, I just don't know how to get out of this thing. What are you going to? Like, how are you practicing this art of groundedness as it serves you and your mental health?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think
you can't say you fly back to the farm every time, right? I don't know if that's possible.
This is unique. To be totally transparent, I used to come back to the farm once, maybe twice a year over the last 13, 14 years of me being in other cities. This is a unique opportunity for me where I just thought it would be a great time to get the hell out of LA while everybody was very depressed.
Sure.
But I think it's a number of things, right? The first thing that I do, and I recommend for other people to do, is reach out to the people closest to you and let them know what's going on right away. The worst thing that we can do is isolate. Recently, I would say like a year and a half ago, I went down another like dark rabbit hole and I started isolating very quickly. And you don't even realize you're doing it. You're just like, I just don't want to go out. I made plans. I don't want to see anybody. I'm going to cancel those plans last minute. Tell you what, I'm just going to eat. It's going to be hard to get out of bed. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to do my thing. And then I'm going to go back to bed and I'm going to watch movies and stare at TikTok and never communicate with my friends or relatives or people that love me and that I love. Immediately avoid isolation, because that only creates the rumination of thoughts that are bad. They're toxic for your brain. It's like sipping poison and expecting somebody else to die from it, right? You're creating a bad circle. The next thing is, you have to, if you want to change yourself mentally, a lot of times you have to change your physical state. And when we're depressed, you find yourself laying down and you're staring at TikTok and all that.
Your posture is hunched over on your phone, yeah, and all that, like physical. That. Yeah, wow.
Right. And like, yeah, give me some of the physical manifestations of if you get depressed, right? Posture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tired. Just like moping around. No, zero facial expressions. Like, you and I are probably very animated by nature. So like, if I'm thinking of depressed thoughts or like these toxic thoughts, as you'd mentioned, like, yes, I'm just numb. And it's like, there's no expression there. Whereas like right now you're firing me up on this interview. I'm like super, yeah, like moving my hands like an Italian dad, like all this stuff. You know what I mean? The whole thing.
Yeah. So being around people, and then hopefully those people inspire you to get moving and do something. But if you're mentally stuck, you have to physically get unstuck. So go for a run, go to the gym, go out and see somebody, do something you like, physically engage in something else to move your body out of that state, because you're just creating a neural pathway of depression and you're reinforcing it every single day that you stay in that rut. And it's hard. Don't get me wrong. It's so fucking hard to get out of that state. You're tired, you're exhausted, and it's like all the hormones in your body have been sucked out of your soul. You've got no energy. But if you can just take that first step and another step and just baby step that all the way to some sort of physical activity, you can slowly start to change that neural pathway in your brain that you've reinforced. The next thing is therapy. You know, as soon as you can, talk to somebody that. And for everybody out there that's like, I don't need to see a shrink, I wouldn't take financial advice from the homeless guy that threw shit on my window like last week, right? Like, I'm not going to ask about the stock market with him. I'm going to be like, all right, where's a good place to eat around here? But no stock market advice. That's how we should treat our mental states. You go to a person that has spent years studying the mind, psychology, neurology, and how all these things work together, and how you can improve your stuff, your mentality, your physicality, your neurology with the tools that they give you. And that's such a mistake on people's parts to not. And like, we go to our friends, you know.
And sometimes that's not the answer, right? I mean, they always say it's like biased by nature because they know you already. And same with family. It's like, these things are probably, I mean, I'll give you an example really quick. It's like, I had therapy today about my friends and family.
Yeah.
You think I'm going to go to my friends and family about things that I'm dealing with? Absolutely not. And to your point, it's a beautiful thing to go to someone that doesn't have judgment. And like, maybe the word is just a bit triggering to people. So I just call it, I don't know, your hang sesh with your new friend. Just keeping it, make it a little bit more like less daunting. And not you, but all of us should. And like, therapy is like a trigger word, right? Just like anything. People talk about money. Money seems like a trigger word these days. It's like, find a way to not make it so triggering, which means just make your own version of that. If therapy is weird to you, like, because for whatever reason, you just think it's weird. Okay, great. Then like, find another way to do it that makes more sense for you. You know, doesn't have to be in person. Doesn't have to be on a couch. Doesn't have to be, I mean, I walk around a park on a phone call with mine, you know, and I'm sure you do too, where it's like, yeah, sometimes you want to be in person and cry and let it out. Sometimes you're just like, hey, I'm just checking in. And I actually took your advice last week and this actually worked. So thank you. And that could be over a phone call.
Absolutely, it can. Where do you find you have your most breakthrough in a therapy session?
Gosh. Moments like this. I mean, this isn't therapy, but like a lot of what I do in my therapy sessions is try to identify where my real life plays out because I'm so aware now from therapy. One of the first conversations I had with my therapist was help me be more aware and less anxious about that awareness. And that was a weird way to put it, but it's definitely helped. And so as you're talking, Pearson, you have no idea. And like if you're listening right now, you've probably heard, but you can't see necessarily like how him and I are engaging. I've written down things that you've said, and then I would follow up on a thing, and I'm like, damn, my therapist just talked about that earlier today. And that like synchronicity, as they call it, right? Like understanding what that looks like in life, and whether or not you're spiritual or religious or you believe in the universe, higher power, all those things aside, I think energy is real. I think connection's real. So yeah, in therapy, I focus a lot on that, and those were my awakenings, is like getting out of those calls and then living my life. You know what I mean? And like you and I talked about this earlier. Actually, you brought it up again, but it's social media. It's like, I don't want to be on my phone. You don't want to be on your phone. You know what I mean? And like, none of us really want to be on our cell phones or in front of computer screens all day long. It's so unhealthy. So then a lot of times when we find, to your point about finding the people that love us, that we love, that we can connect with, I think it is actually so important to find those people in real life. You know what I mean? Your therapist can be virtual all day long. Your fitness trainer can be virtual all day long. You know, your pen pal, sure, you can write them a note if they don't live near you. But the people you have in your community, to your point, as someone who, and not a lone wolf, but you grew up alone, like a lot more alone than most of us, yet you found these to be the right tools and resources and then gave us these 3 points. So if you can do it, I think all of us can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally possible. And there's, breaking it down to three specific moments is simplifying all of it, but like that helps. And just all those, you can go into diet, you can go into nutrition, you can go into all these different things, but just being around people that care, right? Just being around a therapist that they're a trained professional and they know what they're doing. It's awesome. It's so good. It's so freeing. And to the artists that are listening to this, right? One of the things that artists fear the most is losing our creativity. And we're afraid of losing that thing that makes us great, right? Whatever that is, whether it's like, I'm a little bit crazy, I'm willing to do things that nobody else is going to try. Sure, whatever. You don't lose it because you did therapy, right? You don't lose it because you stop becoming an alcoholic, you stop smoking weed. It becomes an arsenal where you can tap into that and step out of it so you can have a healthy life and still be so active. When you engage with that part of yourself, it's like it's been building up and it's there and it's thick and there's tension inside of it. And so you engage and go into creative mode and it comes out all these different ways. And then you can step back and enjoy the rest of your life. And it makes it so much better. And I think we get it twisted at times as artists, or just people that engage with life like it's art, where you think you're going to lose your edge, but it only makes your edge sharper.
I mean, it probably makes you more intentional, would you say? When you're able to, yeah. I mean, there's no justification to like therapy or having conversations like this that are so vulnerable. But like, as you get more vulnerable and you find the resources and tools, to your point, it's funny. Like tools, it's like literally something that's a tool is sharp, right? Like, and then you just mentioned it being sharp, but so it's very true. But then on the same front, it's like, don't we all want to live this? Holistic might not be the right word. It's like you just want to live a good life, and good these days. You don't have to live a like okay, great. Well, let's say great life. It does mean you're healthy. It does mean you're like fixing your the things that make you anxious and depressed and things of that sort. And then when you're in a business like yours, which is why I interview celebrities, like when you're in a business like that, if you can share with us like what you've shared, thank you for doing that. Like. Then it is possible for anybody listening that's not, banged up on the magazine covers and living in the hills, being looked at, taking photos of every day. Like that, we don't live that life, right? So if you can share with us what you have, and again, thanks for doing that. Like that's a proven thing that all of us have an opportunity, as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot there to unpack.
And that's the best part. I think like you've been able to use your platform in a lot of ways, right? And so that's my next question for you. If you think about how you've managed, let's call it your brand, right? All encompassing platforms, social media kits, brand deals, all these things. Yeah. Like you just think of Pearson, right? As the person who, I love what you said about this 90-minute rule. Sometimes all you need is 90 minutes. And if the actors, and like you had said, everybody in the entertainment business is doing it with intention, love, and purpose for the viewers, then the audience, right? Which essentially is how you guys make your money anyway, right? $20 yeah. box office tickets. Like, so that alone proved to us today in this conversation that you do have that intention set. That said, when you're looking at the, I guess like the rest of your career and how you want to navigate it in that sense, like, is that what carries you into working now? You said you got off 3 calls before you and I even Zoomed together. So then, you know, does that push you? Does it motivate you? And like, I want a little more of like how you staying certain and grounded in a way with knowing your purpose as an entertainer keeps you working.
Yeah. I have a big thing. I call it my why, right? Which your purpose, the thing that wakes you up in the morning. And that purpose and that why has to be infinitely stronger and pointed and sharpened than anything else in your life. When you get depressed, when finances hit, you know, when it's hard, when people die, people pass away, when, you know, there's not enough to go around for everybody, when you have betrayals, those moments that just suck the life out of you. The next day you get up, you still have to have your why, and it has to be clear. You have to set your vision perfectly clear for yourself. Because if it's not, the world will eat you up and spit you out, and nobody cares. Like, nobody can care as much as you care about your life and your dream and your job. Like, nobody's going to show up to your house and be like, dude, it's going to take some time, but I'm going to spend every day with you till you become a movie star. No.
Such a good point.
Right. Like, nobody's going to make you the best chef in the world that makes perfect hamburgers, because they don't care like you do. And even to my own team members, my managers, my agents, my publicists, like, I love all of them immensely, but they aren't going to care as much as I do about my career and have as specific as a vision. So I think to add to that piece and bring it back to a little bit of grounding is like, you know, the ability that I had as a kid of transitioning from a farm boy to an actor and an entertainer and hopefully producer, writer, director. Those are the things that I want to chase as my career progresses. And I think I've helped hone in the ability to not care. That being said, I care so much, right? I care too much, but I don't care if it doesn't go well. It sucks and you feel it, but you can't care because you have to get up the next day and do it again. And one of the things that's built up like a tolerance to that is auditions. Like, imagine for the audience, imagine for a second, if you applied for probably over 150 jobs a year and you only got one or two, maybe 10, maybe 15, if you're really good. That's your ratio. You've got to build a tolerance, and it's a numbers game. Life is a numbers game. You've just got to up those numbers real quick. Just keep pumping them out. And eventually something sticks, and you've got to not care as soon as you've completed the task and you've put it out into the world, it's somebody else's to care about now. You did your job of caring while you created that process, while you created that thing and you interpreted it how you thought it was best. Mm. And that's how, like, I kind of push myself every day. Like, these meetings that I set up, I've been pitching a couple movies. We're in development on two right now. And I've got two or three others, including a TV show that I wrote. And, you know, I'm pitching those to other studios and companies and production companies. As soon as I've left a meeting, I set up the next meeting. As soon as I've set up that meeting, I set up another meeting. And until somebody cares enough to buy that thing, you can't stop at just one because you're like, you got turned down. Oh, sorry. Get to the next fucking one. Who cares?
I love Pearson. That's exactly right. I mean, yeah, maybe it is a little bit of the art of not caring so much, but you're right. There's a level of next. Like, why would you wait? Like, life is too short. I think that's the point you're hitting at. It's like, life is too short to dwell, and you can dwell on something for like 2 minutes if you really thought it should have been something more than what it really turned out to be. Sure. Again, to your point, though, it's really going to come down to whether or not it was meant to happen, number one. Number two, did the other people, were they there at the right place at right time to care enough with you so that you guys can work on it together? Because it's not a solo thing. You can't do it by yourself. You need people. But like, I love that you said that.
Tell me what you think about this, because this, sometimes people like it, sometimes they don't, but this helps me so much. You are going to die. Infinite freedom. Period. And in 100 years, nobody's going to care. So just do it.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, it's you. You're the second person. The first one person I heard that from was Gary Vaynerchuk. And it's like, you will die no matter what. And if you stick to that, you're like, got it. So it's not that I'm going to die tomorrow. And it's not that I'm going to turn into what are they called? Hypochondriac. But right. Let me fully understand that this does not matter, because what we thought mattered 10 years ago does not matter today. Did it add a little bit of value or zhuzh or je ne sais quoi to what we're doing professionally? Yeah, sure, whatever, right? But like, or does that friend from 10 years ago add, you know, like, depends. Like, it's all relative, right? At the end of the day, if your gut and your heart say to do something, which it sounds like you follow, that's exactly right. Like, this chance, and it's not even about like, this may never come again. You may not, you may not have the motivation like this again, or the energy, you know, people get old and frail and things happen, and like, health does come first. So while you are healthy, excited and motivated and fucking ambitious to do something, let's just go. And you prove that.
It's absolutely correct. To prove that point for both of us and everybody listening, my dad is 62 years old. He's got 5 or 6 heart attacks under his belt. And he still loves farming. Like, he loves it. He's addicted to it and he can't stop. And he loves the profession of taking care of people and animals. And the idea that he feeds a piece of the world is admirable to him. And he does it and he loves doing it. And he'll probably die doing it. Like, that's how he wants to go. And I think that's awesome. Mm. You have to.
Right. You know what I'll mention too? I could keep you on this podcast for the 2 hours that I saw you doing other podcasts. we will save that for more of an in-studio moment. Okay. I think we'd have a really good time with some studio time together. You know, as I could never really have imagined that like you would have been like this on a podcast. I can feel that like, no, well, listen, when I first had asked our buddy Sean, I said, Sean, I want to get Pearson on this podcast. He goes, yeah, he'll do it. And then he goes, oh, he's excited. And I'm like, okay, listen, some people say that, some people don't mean it. And you, from the time we clicked record, when I said, hey, like, if anything is said that you don't feel comfortable saying, and like, you know, just to be transparent with the audience here, like, that's exactly how all these go. And I was hopeful that you would share the things that you've shared and brought so many things full circle that like, we had no choice but to stay engaged the entire time. I also love this thing. I don't know if I've seen you do it too many times, but you like also shifting the seat. You know, you shifted the seat twice here where you asked me a question twice. And that's also admirable because you are engaged. And like, as an interviewer, I've done this like 500 plus times in a couple of years. And it's like, come on. You know, when someone's like, we're not being honest or opening up in the way that like makes sense for a good conversation. And you did that. So I just wanted to mention that like, this is a fruitful conversation because of Pearson. So, you know,
I appreciate that. You're a great interviewer too. You give space and time and you ask the right questions. So that's your job is done perfectly.
I appreciate that. Wait, so I should have stopped recording. No, I'm kidding. I'm like, should have stopped recording before everybody knew that we were supposed to have this conversation after the interview and be like, hey, we can go compliment each other and tell each other how each other is so great after the interview. No, but I think that's really great. And I could only imagine that that's how you are. You know, I'm looking at this photo of you at a football game or boxing and like doing shoots with people that are probably like all over you in a good way, like supporting your career. But You hit on this point, and we'll make this our last topic of conversation, but in this way that you are living in like Hollywood, right? I mean, that's your life, and you're able to stay humble. It really just comes down to your background, I think, and how you were raised. And I mean, there's a lot to what we're learning about you on this podcast that reminds us when we have big goals and aspirations as human beings, that it's okay to maybe sometimes get lost in the sauce. You got to find your way back. And so as we wrap up this conversation, like finding your way back has kind of been the theme of today's conversation anyway, but help us with that. If you have any motivational thoughts around like, hey guys, like this is, if you have big goals to you know, buy that big house or to be a big movie star or to put out a record label or whatever, release whatever they call them, albums, I guess, right? So that, like, to make sure you're always coming back to ground zero and you know, making sure that you don't lose yourself in the process.
That's a great question. I'll use myself as a great example. There was a moment in my life where I was on a series and, you know, we shot quite a bit. It was The Bold and the Beautiful. And we shot, I think it was like 225 episodes a year, something crazy, or 250 episodes a year. That's a lot of work. It's, you know, we're shooting 90 to 120 pages a day of dialogue that's heavy. And we're going in and out of all these like high and low emotional states and hitting the beats. And in the midst of that, I was making great money. I was getting good publicity. I got nominated for 2 Emmys. And so like I was feeling confident in the world, and it really benefited everybody around me. Like I was able to give out to the world and, you know, have some for myself, which was awesome. And I love that. I love being in a place where I can take care of the people around me. But one of the things that started to happen slowly is I realized that I could be at a party and everybody would know me, but not a single person knew who I was. And it becomes the loneliest person in the room when they all see you and they think they know you. They have this idea of you. They've seen you on Instagram. They've seen you at these places. They've seen you accomplishing the goals that they want. But God, it's lonely. And you can quickly find your way into some bad habits if you allow that to be your driving force and your why over time. And if you want to have longevity in whatever dream you pursue and whatever lifestyle you engage with, you do have to find your way back, because the people that love you the most and the people that care the most have been dying to get to know that side of you that's honest and real. And that'll keep you from being the loneliest person in the room. Now in my life, I have like 2 or 3 people I keep very, very, very close. Pretty much divulge most of my information with them. Not all of it, you know, keep some of that to myself. But those are the people that you need in those crowded places and spaces where you can find your way back to who you are, and they keep you, they're on your shit. You know, they roast you when you need it. They tell you you're being a dickhead, and maybe you need to be a dickhead for that moment, but get back to not being a dickhead afterwards. You know, wow. They have fun with you, and they engage with you the way that you need to be engaged with. And that will make you so much more successful in whatever endeavor you pursue than just letting yourself fully engage to the cesspool of life and the free things that come your way as you become more successful. Always find your way back, because you just have so many tools in your arsenal from a place of humility and grounding and excitement for your dream than you do of just letting everything go.
If that's not a podcast episode, I don't know what the hell is anymore. December 7th, everybody. It is, gosh, we're inching towards the last part of the year. I don't think I could have asked for a better conversation to inspire people to do so. And to combat loneliness exactly how you said to do so, especially if you're leveling up, as they say, in your life and your career and the things you're accomplishing. That is so important, let alone everything else you've hit on today from, you know, how you grew up. I could ask you about all these things all day long. And it's like, you've kind of woven this beautiful conversation alone. Thank you for letting me hold the conversation with you, by the way, and trusting me. But like, the 90-minute rule as to why you do your career and the way that you grew up on a farm and the relationship you have with your dad seems so pure and authentic, and it adds value to your career, but it's the man that you are now today because of that way that you grew up with him. And then understanding how like, yeah, okay, sometimes you can like eat, sleep, and breathe your career. And like, that's not always a good thing. And when a strike happens, you realize very quickly that that's not how it was supposed to be. And then lastly, you hit on a very good point of just like finding your groundedness while being true to yourself and finding the right people to live that out with. So, Pearson, that was really, really, really great. And I really appreciate you, again, trusting me with the conversation. You make this job very, very easy. And I cannot wait to do something like this with you in a studio or a sit down, or I don't care where we do it. I just know there's more stories to be told from your side of the house, and I want to share them. So appreciate you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for hosting an incredible podcast and being a great host that steered the conversation in great directions. You're fantastic.
Hey friends, Justin again. Well, that was the conversation today, and I hope you took plenty away from it. For those who keep coming back to this podcast, I want to say thank you for always being here and growing with my guests and I over the years. And if you're new to the Men of the Hour show, thank you for being here, and I'd love for you to come back next time by clicking that subscribe button. Oh, and for all of us tuning in right now, I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode by leaving a rating and review right where you're listening. Until next week, I'm your host, Justin Crawford. Continue taking care of yourself and inspiring others to do the same.